In fact, far from bringing different structures of production together as a sort of red thread in human history, individuality is a creation of the capitalist system. The pre-capitalist scene is characterized by rootedness, whereas uprootedness and the dissolution of organic bonds is the necessary prerequisite of modern individuality and our ability to even conceive of it. So far, individuality has been regarded as the distinctive feature of capitalism, as if bourgeois society was primarily formed by individuals. But to avoid misunderstandings, it is now necessary to problematize this assumption. In the outlines of the Critique of Political Economy, Marx argues that, I quote, "Society does not consist of individuals, but expresses the sum of the relationships and the conditions in which these individuals stand to one another." End of quotation. Thus, society is not founded on individuals, but on their relation. Relation have primacy over individuals. Therefore, bourgeois society is based on the realm of relation, on connections and aggregates. Far from being ironic, Marx's view describes relation polemically as a relation of domination marked by an asymmetry between existing forces. Bourgeois society is not founded on the existence of individual atoms and unrelated singularities, rather, it develops through a complex network of relations. Given that society is not a mere sum of individual atoms, capitalism itself creates society to a large extent. I quote, "Bourgeois society is the most developed and many-faced historical organization of production." End of quotation. But Marx also warns against universalizing the interpretative frameworks of bourgeois society. Instead, he tries to focus on its specific difference from pre-capitalist structures. From this standpoint, only the capitalist system is a society in the strict sense of the term. The use of the word society to describe previous modes of production would be improper and imprecise because no form that preceded capitalism was structured through a network of relations. Therefore, not only the category of the individual, but also that of society belongs to the capitalist framework. Prior to capitalism, it was inconceivable to talk of individual and their independence from bonds that prevented their movement, as well as a society as a complex series of connections. Given that notions of individual and society were unthinkable before the capitalist mode of production, their relation needs to be investigated. For these reasons, this element cannot be examined independently of one another. On the contrary, natural rights theorists, and Rousseau in particular, who pushed this model to its extreme consequences, and the classical political economists share the common notion that one must presuppose the isolated individual as being free from any bonds with the social context. I quote, individuals producing in a society, hence the socially determined production by individual, is of course the point of departure. The individual and isolated hunter and fisherman who serve Adam Smith and Ricardo as a starting point is one of the unimaginative fantasies of the 18th century. Robinson adds, no more is Rousseau's social contract, which by means of a contract establishes a relationship and connection between subjects that are by nature independent, based on this kind of naturalism. This is an illusion, and nothing but the static illusion of the small and big Robinsonades. It is rather the anticipation of bourgeois society, which began to evolve in the 16th century and was making giant strides towards maturity in the 18th. End of quotation. Contract theorists such as Rousseau and classical political economists such as Smith and Ricardo developed their investigations starting from the existence of a natural man who was completely isolated and independent, and thus created their Robinsonades. The man, Mensch in German, they call upon can only exist in the false novel set on a desert island, not in a complex structure like bourgeois society. Speaking of individual irrespective of their social context is meaningless, because they are always and under all circumstances operating inside a society. Marx points out that Rousseau, Smith and Ricardo were not motivated by nostalgia of the man of nature and a critique of civilization. This aesthetic appearance is deceitful because it hides a reference to a particular context and its determined lines of domination. From this standpoint, the link between individual and society and the impossibility of conceiving of the one without the other bring to light the non-neutral character of the representation of isolated individuals, a point to the socially determined production of individuals and the asymmetries that pertain to it. But the assumption of the key role of society does not entail its a critical hypostasis or an emphasis on the social at expense of the individual. In fact, Marx is critical of modern society and wishes for it to be overcome because he believes that it immanently requires the substantial separation of individuals from one another entail shared subjugation to an objective anonymous power materialized in money. Two interconnected separations are at play. One concerns the relations between individuals and social circumstances. The other, the relationship of individuals amongst themselves. If one moves beyond the sphere of simple commodity circulation, characterized by absolute equality and the reciprocity of the subjects who operate in it, and descends into the underground of production, the individual element is revealed to be subsumed by the dimension of the social. I quote, "In the totality of existing bourgeois society, this postulation as price and its circulation, etc., appears as the superficial process below which, in the depths, other processes occur in which the apparent equality and freedom of individuals disappear. It is forgotten that right from the start the premise of exchange value as the objective basis of the whole system of production already implies coercion of the individual, that the individual no longer exists except as a producer of the exchange value. This implies the complete negation of his natural existence. Hence, he is wholly determined, bestimmt in German, by society." End of quotation. Thus, there is a real subjection of individual to the social power embodied by money. I quote, "The individuals are subsumed under social production, which exists outside them as their fate, but social production is not subsumed under the individual who manage it as their commonwealth." End of quotation. Money functions as mediator and transforms the relation in German Verhältnis between people into a relation in German Verhalten between things, from human needs to the needs materialized in an object that confers social power to its owners. Sociality is connected to the domination of money and not founded on the existence of an association of individuals. But Marx does not critique the state in the name of society. He criticizes both the state and bourgeois society for their reliance on a topology of domination, asserting the need and possibility of overcoming them. If one stops at the surface level of the simple circulation of commodities, one can see the relation of two individuals, A and B, as being characterized by equality and reciprocity, hence freedom. In the context of the simple circulation of commodities, there emerges the juridical moment of the private, not social, contract of individuals involved in relation of exchange who recognize one another as owners. It is clear that the reason for the contract is not a desire to enter into relation with another, but a reciprocal interest and thus the possibility of achieving one's goals through the other, who function as a means. Therefore, the mystification inherent to reciprocity, in German Wechselseitigkeit, must be revealed and its limit must be shown without giving credence to the illusion of its neutral application. In the move from the surface of the sphere of circulation to the depth on the sphere of production, the above contradictions arise. In particular, freedom and equality turn into their opposites, lack of freedom and inequality. As soon as one descends to the underground of production, the equality of the operating subjects is merely fictitious. Ideas of liberty and equality hide the fact that worker and capitalist are opposed to one another in an unequal condition and asymmetrical relation. I quote, what the worker exchanges for capital is labor itself, he alienates itself. In German, Entäußert. End of quotation. We still find the idea that the universal principles conceal a structure of domination. Does not mean that freedom and equality are an expression of a hidden form of slavery, nor does it deny their existence as more than mere names or covers for their opposite. These notions can only be conceived in the context of the capitalist mode of production. The reduction of men to universal subjects of exchange without national or individual barriers, operating in a state of equality and freedom, and the structural twofold nature of this concept are an innovation of the modern period. When moving from the sphere of circulation of simple commodities to that of production, the mystifying but not sicke simpliciter unreal character of such a representation of freedom and equality is powerfully revealed. Thus, these symmetries explode because of the materialization of the untenable reciprocity of capitalist and worker, who cannot be separated from the dynamics inherent to the capital-labor relation. An important aspect that frequently recurs in the analysis emerges again here, namely, the identification of the dual character of the capitalist mode of production. Society is fractured into two irreconcilable sides that are not homologous. The importance of the role of class points to the limitation of a purely individualistic approach to the debate. This reflection does not result in an uranic view of interrelationality, because the realm of relations is problematic and marked by internal fractures, asymmetries, and displacements. In this perspective, conflict is not simply an effect of the capitalist system, but its fundamental condition, because capital is the contradiction in progress between past objectified labor and present living labor. Capitalism is the first system of production based on the existence of classes engaged in an irreconcilable antagonism. The dual structure of bourgeoisie and proletariat is characterized by a non-relation between classes and a fracture that cannot be mended. The capitalist mode of production, insofar as it is based on social relations, is intrinsically political. The Italian workerism or operaism in the 1960s, 70s stressed this political character of the class and of the class struggle. Therefore, society constitutively bound to the capitalist system is not simply an artificial construction, but a framework that reduces singular individuals to their economic function and individuates them on the basis of their possession of money, thus granting political slavery on the apparent freedom of labor. The outlines of the Critique of Political Economy claim that the class dimension in itself does not characterize all historical epochs, but is a distinctive trait of the capitalist system. Even if we recognize class relations prior to capitalism, their conflict never impinges on the unity of man and land in pre-capitalist social formations.